you're just trying to support, again, the narrative that's being told this time with this grouping of works. That's how I see my job. It's not like I'm going to make Kandinsky better. I'm going to try and help tell the story this grouping of Kandinsky paintings and prints and drawings are telling this time.
I think you see that clarity. I mean, these sections are so clearly defined by the color scheme. So the Russian period is in this deep blue, and it's clearly a separate section from this 1913 period. And then again, when you enter the Bauhaus, it's very clear that you've entered a different decade and a different chapter in Kandinsky's career. Let me show you one other work prior to going into the mural room. And this is from Kandinsky's Russian period, where he's really artistically all over the map. He's doing impressionistic paintings, a kind of return to his earliest, very conservative works on this wall, these six plein air paintings. But he's also part of the Russian avant-garde. So he's part of the official Soviet government structure to create new museums, because they had confiscated all private property, including art collections. So he was part of a team that was creating 22 new Soviet museums. But he was in contact with the Russian suprematists and constructivists, who were working and also in an abstract style that was more geometrically stylized and reductive. And here we see that influence his art right before he goes to the Bauhaus. And he actually becomes someone who helps transmit this language of Russian constructivism and suprematism to the German artists through the Bauhaus. So we'll see this in his Bauhaus period.
In the Bauhaus, yeah. And of course, this on that dark blue, we've got a beautiful kind of almost royal blue background. And this particular print is black and white. It's almost like pen and ink.
Yes, it is. And actually, this one is an ink on paper. These two are both ink on paper, and they're watercolors and prints as well. But yeah, it's surprising how this strong color really is a great background for these works to pop off of. And again, I have to credit our colleague Angela for bringing a very bold color scheme that initially I looked at and thought, wow, I'm not sure. And it really, when she showed us the installation shots from Milan, I mean, it really took that for me, Doubting Thomas, to see, oh, wow, that looks great. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought of that, and it looks terrific. So I think we had fun once we embraced that.
No, I think we had as always, the measure of success is always the degree of collaboration that you had. There's no getting around that. You know, no one person's vision. The only person's vision that's singular here is Kandinsky's. If you lose sight of that, you're just lost, or you're on an ego trip. And it's really important not to go there.
Yeah, it's about the artwork.
Oh my gosh, Bonnie, hey, listen, we're all human. If you don't have a big ego, it's hard to do these jobs. In fact, it's probably impossible to do these jobs. I have a big ego. I think Brady has a big ego. But you keep it in check. If you don't keep it in check, that's when you start, you know, making mistakes.
All right.
I never thought of that. Keep it in check. I'll try to remember that.
Except when it comes to the color schemes. Don't necessarily do that, because I love these color schemes. Where are we heading to now?
Okay, so this is sort of the prelude to the mural room. And these are the original studies, gouache studies. Gouache is like a dry, opaque watercolor. So these are the original studies that Kandinsky made for the mural room. And what happened was, he was invited by Walter Gropius, director of the Bauhaus, to come and visit. And for Kandinsky, it's an opportunity to get out of Russia, which had been a pretty bleak period for him. And when he visited Gropius in Weimar, Gropius offered him a job teaching mural painting at the Bauhaus. And this is great. So it opens a new chapter for Kandinsky. So he's very happy. He actually moved to Berlin first and just sort of recuperated from the privations of the Russian Revolutionary period. And then he was offered at the same time the opportunity to create this mural for the Jury Fry exhibition, which was an annual exhibition in Berlin with no jury, Jury Fry. And so he made these studies, and then he worked with his students at the Bauhaus, and he had them scale up these paintings to create the murals. So that's how you create murals. You design them and have other people help you execute them. So they did that, and the exhibition was successful. Afterwards, the paintings were lost, and nobody knows what happened to them. They might have been blown up during the Second World War or put in a closet and forgotten about. I mean, we don't know what happened. But before Nina Kandinsky died, and she lived into the early 1980s, she worked with the conservators and curators at the Pompidou to create exact replicas of the murals to scale using these studies and the photographs that we have on the adjacent wall that show Kandinsky working with the students to scale up these murals, and we have photographs of the murals. So they did exact replicas. When the Pompidou opened in 1977, their famous Richard Rogers Renzo Piano building, they had this mural room in the opening in the lobby. And the murals have never been shown in the United States, so this is the first time that they're presented here at the Milwaukee Art Museum.
And so for you, David, to actually have to be thinking about hanging, because they're canvas, right? I mean, it's soft canvas.
Correct.
Yeah, so you have to think about it. It's almost like a theatrical set.
Bonnie, really, the best way to think about it, although this might be a little abstract, but I bet not, is there's four paintings in a room, and they are the room. They're so big that they go out and touch each other. In fact, it's actually eight because it's sort of this uneven octagonal shape. But in this regard, Bonnie, the mural room, the biggest challenge to the mural room, because it's a complete thing, there was no aesthetic challenge. The real challenge to it was to just make sure that the walls that we were building that supported with the doorways in and the doorways out and the headers above those doorways were all correct, because we weren't going to get a second shot at it. The work showed up, and we either had built the support system right or we hadn't. And then in addition, we wanted to have this scrim ceiling put on to give it more of a sense of a room. And then that was a little, that Bonnie was more like what I was saying earlier. Not terribly sexy kind of work, more math-based and measuring not once, not twice, but three times before making the proverbial cut, because you were only going to get that one shot. And it all's well that ends well when it comes out as well as this did.
Right, and it did. And so let's move in to that room. Now, I guess I hadn't realized that these were recreations, that the originals had been lost.
Yes, so even the gouache studies are very light sensitive, so they normally don't travel either, and they're only coming here to the Milwaukee Art Museum, but we're the only place that will have the original studies and this recreation that was done under the supervision of Nina Kandinsky. One of the challenges that David worked with is that the Pompidou was trying to come up with a new system to install this, because it had been a long time since they had done it. And of course, everything's in metric. So, that measure thrice, cut once sort of thing is complicated by the, the metric system. So there's really very little room for error here, particularly when we put this last wall in place, the keystone wall. That's when we knew the measurements were correct. I mean, you can kind of move things around a little bit, but when you get to the end, it either fits or it doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah, it has. And
no, it's a little like, you hear the story of the guy building the building a boat, and he builds it in his basement, and then he realizes, oh my gosh, I can't get it outside. This was more like building a boat outside that you were going to take apart and take down to your basement and put it together, and it needed to fit in your basement. So it was just, it's the kind of thing that if you enjoy doing, it might sound horrible to someone listening, but if you like doing it, you're an exhibit designer. To me, it was really a challenge, and it was something that there was plenty of support for. There were people at the Pompidou were great. We did have there was a language and a big time barrier, because they're way ahead of us in time.
You got language, metric. Versus
there were a few things, they had still they had made drawings that we used, and I translated into the program that I use and into inches, and we've got a really great group of preparators here who are the folks on the ground who do all the carpentry and and installation work here, and those guys were great, and we all communicated, and it goes back to that collaborative thing, Bonnie. It's going to sound like I'm some kind of like happy-go-lucky hippie, but if you can't cooperate with people, this job is too big. You know, again, the only superstar ever involved in a thing like this is the artist, him or herself. The rest of us are here to serve, and the more you get that in your head, the more outstanding the product is going to be.
How many people do you have working for you here putting installations together?
We have an installation crew of 7.
Okay. And that includes carpenters and all kinds of preparators and people who, okay.
We also have registrars and conservators, and when we're doing a show like this, it's kind of all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. So we have probably 10 people up in the space working on this show. They'll be opening up crates, doing condition reports, making sure things arrive safely, and then particularly in installing this room, it took a lot of people. I mean, this painting, each one of these walls, the 4 large walls, are 20 by 13 feet. And when they lifted this, there were 3 of our crew were standing up on top of that wall with ropes that were attached to the back of the stretcher. And there were about 5 people below, and they were pushing as the people with the ropes were pulling. So this is Pompidou and Mam staff raising this wall like a barn raising, you know, a synchronized movement, so there was no fluctuation in the plane of the canvas to do it safely. It was really amazing to watch. I mean, I've never seen a painting installed that way before. And then this final piece that David was talking about, this scrim, this is David's idea at the end, and it creates this glowing light in the room, which is really beautiful, but it also sort of hides the ceiling plane, which is pretty aggressive. I mean, Calatrava's ribs are a major architectural statement, and this neutralizes it just in this room. So it's a very beautiful glowing quality that gives the murals their own presence. And when the president of the Pompidou came to the opening, and he's the one superstar who was involved in this project, he's a presidential appointment, he's sort of a big deal, and he usually doesn't come to openings in the United States. So he came, and he walked in here, and he said, oh, the mural has never looked better. I mean,
well, that should make you feel good.
Oh, absolutely. That's always what you're going for.
Yeah, is that it never looked better.
Never looked better.
Yeah. Well, it's just so impressive to think about how long. You talked about it for a year, but once you knew this was happening and everything was in motion, how long did it take you to actually create this exhibit here?
Well, the installation period was about 4 weeks. That's our typical period. I think there's a week of taking things down and patching and painting walls. I mean, David's in here supervising it. He can go through the sequence with you, but I mean, we have it mapped out on the model well in advance, and then, you know, we like to think the execution is perfunctory. A piece like this mural room, is not perfunctory. It's a unique installation. It was actually the first thing that we did, and we had to stretch the paintings inside this room. They're so big you couldn't bring them through this doorway, so we had to stretch the canvases one at a time in here and install these walls one at a time. So pretty remarkable. And there are 135 works in the show, so it's a big show. I mean, it's pretty time consuming to install a show that size, and then you throw on top of it this mural room, and it meant that we were working on weekends and Memorial Day.
I was
going to
say, pretty much 24 hours a day. Yeah. It almost sounds like, you know, you need to have the preparedness of a military campaign. You know, you have to have all the troops organized, you have to have all the materials, you have to have the logistics sorted before you can even think about hanging one painting on a wall.
Yeah, well, you know, Bonnie, it is like anything that you're going to get a single shot at. Preparation is the key. You're working with a group of trained professionals, so everybody, you know, it's really important that everybody's bringing their A game. And, you know, one of the things that I always tell people, Bonnie, and it's not just true for this exhibit, it's true for everything that the museum does. You know, if people come to the museum and they ever encounter somebody who says, oh, please don't touch that. One of the things that we deal with all the time is this. We are charged with this really bizarre goal. We want to share things with everybody and let them get as close as they possibly can. And in 500 years or 1,000 years, the murals that we're standing with, they should look just like they do right now. So I'm like, you know, that's a crazy goal. It's like, well, if you want something to look exactly like it does today in a 500 years, why wouldn't you build a box and, you know, hide it away in the dark? And that's a really good question, except that then nobody's enjoying it. So we have this weird life at the museum where we want to allow everyone full access, a small child to a person in their 90s. Everybody gets to see it. Everybody gets to close as they can. But in 500 years, when everybody here is dust, we want that object to still be in that same condition. So it's a, like I say, it's kind of a
balancing act.
It's a crazy balancing act.
Yeah, but it's one that, you know, just looking around this one exhibit, and I know from other exhibits that I've seen here, you know, you balance really well.
I think that that's one of the things that all accredited art museums do, in fact, do, and that's why there is the staff that you need at museums, because that's our crazy goal, is to share, but we don't want anything to even age, which, of course, isn't impossible, but that's still our goal. I know people who are conservators, and to me, you know, people will say, oh my gosh, to me, oh, you're an exhibit designer? I never even thought about that. And I think, you know, there's layers of things that people don't think about. And like the conservators, I mean, they're the classic. I mean, talk about people whose hard work goes completely unthought about by 99% of the population.
Right. But if they don't do it, then you'd notice.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. So what are you two working on right now? What's the next big thing?
Well, we've got a model room that's kind of mind-blowing. We're working on the plan to reinstall the collections museum-wide in a year. So David built scale models for over 100,000 square feet of gallery space. So if you take the model for this gallery times 10, it's around that size.
Bonnie, the model for this gallery that we're in is about the size of a dining room table.
Times 10.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Our model room is bigger than this room that we're standing in. So we have scale images of every work of art that we're going to reinstall in the new museum when we're renovated and when we have the addition done. So that's a huge project, and we're kind of drilling down on the final placement of walls so that we can cut the construction documents at the end of this summer. So we're in high gear to get that finished.
Well, I am excited to see that, as is everyone. But I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your very busy days to tell us a little bit about the Kandinsky exhibit and what it was to actually put it all together here. But thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Bonnie.